We're doing a special class for Hanukkah on Binyan HaBayit, and there are a few points when we discuss Hanukkah that that are worth discussing. Specifically, when we discuss Hanukkah, firstly, we know that the Midrash tells us that when the Greeks declared that every woman must be must first go to the Hagmon, to the Greek governor before marrying her husband. So there are different versions in the Midrash. One version says that the Jews all hid and they never had to do this because they never let the Greeks know when they were getting married. So it never came to play until Matityahu, the Kohen Gadol's daughter, was getting married, and that was a big wedding, so that they couldn't conceal. And then they thought that they'd have to bring her to the governor, and she said, "No way! What's wrong with you guys?" And the Midrash says that she did an act that shocked them. There are different versions in the Midrash. One Midrash says that when they were there, when all the family was together, so she tore her clothes. There are different versions exactly. Another Midrash says when they were taking her to bring her to the Hagmon, so then she stood up on the wagon and tore her clothes publicly, and her brothers got very upset at her. "What are you doing? How immodest." And she said, "Because I'm standing here without clothes, that's immodest, and what you're doing, that's far worse. You're taking me to bring him to the Hagmon. What are you upset at me for my immodesty when you're bringing me to this defiled, impure one?" And when she did that, she aroused her brothers to start the rebellion against the Greeks, which led to the victory, which we celebrate on Hanukkah. Let's stop and think for a second. What happened here? The men were ready to bow their heads. There was a decree. Well, what can you do? And the woman said, "Well, get up and fight." What do you mean? Why should we bow our heads? We find a certain strength of defiance among women that men don't have. When Paro decrees that the male firstborn will be thrown into the river, so the Torah makes a point of showing us that the midwives did not accept Paro's decree. And then the Midrash even goes so far as to enter the home of Amram, the leader of the Jewish people. And the Torah describes very, very peculiar description. The Torah tells us, let's look at the psukim. "Vayelech ish mibet Levi, vayikach et bat Levi. Vatahar ha'isha vatelet ben. Vatitzpeneu shelosha irachim." The woman became pregnant. She gave birth to a child. Until this point, I understand the description is all about her. But then the Torah says, "Vatitzpenehu," she hid him for 3 months. "Velo yachela od hatzefino," and then she couldn't hide him any longer. "Vatikachlo or vataslo tevat gome." Let's look it up. Where is it? Here we go. "Vatikachlo tevat gome." She took for him. She made a little ark of this wood called gome, v'tachmera v'cheimar u'vazafet, and she smeared it with tar. She smeared it with things that would insulate it. V'tasem ba'et hayeled. She placed the child in that casket. V'tasem basuf asfat hayeor, and she placed it in the reeds at the edge of the Nile. Notice, she seems to be acting alone. Where did her husband disappear? The Pasuk stresses, who did all this? The Pasuk makes a point of telling us it was she. She could no longer hide him. She took the casket. She placed the child, and it's not over yet. He has a big brother and a big sister. Vatetatzav achoto merachok. Her sister stood at a distance. To see what happened with him. The daughter of Paro comes back. She sees the child. The child won't nurse. The sister steps forward and says, let me call you a woman who could nurse. And the woman comes and takes him and she nurses him. And when the child grows up, the woman brings him to the daughter of Paro, and the daughter of Paro brings him up and she names him Moshe. Where'd Moshe's father go? Let's take a step back. The Torah describes it as Vayelech Ish mi Bet Levi. A man from the house of Levi went and remarried his wife and then had this child named Moshe. Chazal tell us that when Paro decreed, we're going to throw the firstborn, we're going to throw the baby boys into the Nile, so this man from the house of Levi, the leader of the Jews, Amram, divorced his wife. He said, what do we have to stay married for? They're going to throw our kids into the Nile. For that we don't stay married. When he divorced his wife, all the men divorced their wives. They said, he's our leader, that's what he's doing. Obviously, that's what we should do. What happens next? His 3-year-old daughter comes over to him and says, Dad, your decree is worse than Paro. Paro only decreed on the boys. You're decreeing on the boys and the girls. Based on what you did, there will be no continuance to the Jewish people. They didn't kill. The Egyptians said they would kill. And he listens to her. He said, you're right. And he remarries his wife. And that's where the story of Moshe begins, with Amram remarrying his wife, saying, my daughter's right. Who was able to see beyond the decree? The daughter. There is something within the female makeup that women can see beyond the moment. The Gemara calls it that a woman is sitting here and her eyes are over there. A woman is busy doing one thing here, but her glance is to the future. So that when there's a wicked man by the name of Naval, who is a wealthy person, and he's sent out his sheep to graze, so they are protected by David and his men. And when the time comes that he shears his sheep and he makes a big party, so David sends word to him. He says, look, it's Rosh Chodesh and I don't have food for my men. We've offered your men free protection. You're having a big party. Could you please give us some of the food? And Naval says, you know, there are so many wild people around. How many people are there that rebel against their master? I'm going to waste my food on a derelict like David. And when David hears this, he says, wait a second, I was anointed king by Shmuel the prophet. That's the way he's talking to me. David puts together his court, convenes his court. They come to a ruling that Naval deserves the death penalty. They all put on their swords and they head out to Naval to kill him. And they're heading down a mountain when Abigail, Naval's wife, hears that Naval responded so brazenly to David. So she tells the servant who told her this, put together a pack of food, pack the donkeys, we're going out to David, we're bringing him food, otherwise my husband's a dead man. She packs the food, travels out to David, brings him the food, and David blesses her. He says, you should know, because of you, because of what you did, I'm not going to kill your husband. And Chazal discuss how she proved to him that halachically he was wrong, that really he had no right to kill her husband, and David tells her, you're right. David concedes that she was right. At the end of the conversation, Abigail, who's been as faithful a wife as one could be, she just saved her husband from being killed. She went behind his back to save his life. She says to David, "V'zacharta et amatecha, remember me." What does she mean, remember me? Chazal say that she meant, if I ever become available, don't forget me. And really she did become available. A few days later, her husband died, and then David marries her. So, the same woman who can ride out in the middle of the night and save her husband's life can see beyond the moment. And she was a great woman, Abigail. there's something within the makeup of a woman that gives them the ability to see beyond the moment. We, us men, we live the moment. And we live the moment to the extent that we'll bow our heads the way Amram was willing to bow his head, the way the Chashmonaim were willing to bow their heads. And the women were given the foresight, the bina yetera, that they could see beyond the moment. Now, why is this so important? Because sometimes when the women see beyond the moment, us men get upset. And we don't want to listen. So, 40 days are up, and Moshe Rabbeinu does not descend from the mountain. And the men say, we need a leader. Moshe isn't here, so they put together a golden calf. They want to put together this party and throw in all their jewelry into the fire. They come to the women, and the women say, no, can do. The men, they take their own jewelry and they throw it into the fire. When the men are faced with the obstacle of how are we ever going to win the war against the tribes in the land of Israel, they say, let's turn back. We can't do it. What do the women say? God said it's going to work. We don't know how it's going to work. But you can't just give up now because you don't see how it's going to work. It's the same tenacity that led the women by the... I'm not saying all men are like that. I'm just saying in general we have a tendency that we... Okay, right now I'm stuck with an obstacle. Let me turn around. I'll fight till I feel like I can't win. If I can't win, so I'll stop fighting. The woman says, if you can't win, well, let's think. Tomorrow maybe you'll win. Maybe the next day you'll win. Or maybe you have to fight even if you won't win. We got to move forward. So the women tell the men, we'll go into the land of Israel with you or without you. God said, we're going, we're going. So it's connected to a few traits of the women. It's the emunah that they have. It's a lot of things that they have that we don't have. But one of them is a certain tenacity to stick to a goal that we don't have. We're willing to start all kinds of ideas and then we give up. We don't see beyond the moment. If it worked, good. If it didn't work, fine. Look at the average guy's basement. He's got 15 projects he's starting and he's never finished. A lot of people start all kinds of ideas and inventions and businesses and they don't finish them. Women will see things to fruition. So there are really many points here, but the main point which I wanted to mention tonight is that one of the things we have to learn from all these stories is to listen. Amram listens to his daughter. The Chashmonaim listen to their daughter. And what we also see is that sometimes the women have to talk so that the men will listen. Meaning if Miriam would have come to her father and said, Dad, maybe you should remarry Mom, maybe it wouldn't have worked. We see that Miriam had to make her point harshly. She had to come to her father and say, Dad, you're worse than Paro. When she begins with that, then Amram's listening. Why am I worse than Paro? She explains the point. When Yehudis comes to her brothers and says, guys, you should fight the Chashmonaim, they're not going to listen. But when she tears her clothes, she's got their attention. There's another issue that us men have, and that is that we are hard of hearing what we don't want to hear. Women also have that. But right now we're discussing us men. So maybe one of the lessons we have to learn is to be a little bit more open to hearing what we're being told. And maybe one of the lessons that women have to learn is that sometimes you got to shock a man into seeing what you're trying to tell him, because otherwise he ain't listening. Chanukah Sameach, everyone.